I'd like to welcome you all here today. My name is Mary Angela DeGrazia DiTucci, and this program is sponsored by the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, also known as AGMD. I'm a longtime patient with multiple digestive motility disorders, and I have to say it is an extreme privilege to present this type of a program with one of our volunteers who has been having motility problems since she was a child, and she'll go into more depth with that. Just want to talk to you about a few of the ground rules here. And the first thing is that if you would like to communicate with and join into the conversation and you are having trouble speaking, you can just call out my name, Mary Angela. You can call out Brittany over there. Or you can call the familiar voice there, Laura, and any one of us can bring you in. The other thing is every time you speak and try to single time, if you can just say your first name, and that way there we can match the voice to whoever is speaking. You know, some of you may not want to speak, and I hope that you will get a lot from this program. The other thing is do not share your personal contact information on this program with anybody, not anybody's contact information, so that we have a lot of people that are registered for this program. So try to keep that in mind and make sure everybody has to participate. On that note, Brittany, give it to you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Brittany. I am about to turn 32 years old, and I have had motility issues since birth, actually. I was just sorry about that part. I was totally no complications, no nothing. In fact, out of the other children my mom had, I was the only one to be born full term and at a nice, healthy weight. Yet, I was the one who ended up with all the health issues. They knew pretty much right away that I had something wrong with me. I did not pass any meconium stools, but 30 years ago, the doctors, you know, weren't as proactive as they are now, and they sent me home anyways. Within 24 hours of being home, I was projectile vomiting. My parents obviously took me straight to the hospital, and within another 48 hours, I was on the operating table. They thought I had an obstruction. Pretty simple there was what they thought. Well, when they went to do surgery, they did not find any obstruction. But they still ended up taking out part of my colon. They, you know, sewed me back up and thought I would be fine. Well, shortly after that, and when they tried to reintroduce feeding, the same thing happened. Nothing was moving through. I was vomiting again. So I went back under surgery, and they took out more intestine. This happened several times. And at that point, they thought I had Hirschsprung's disease, which is another type of motility disorder. And as, you know, I went on, they started me on TPN and tried to treat me like they would with somebody with Hirschsprung's, but I wasn't responding. And luckily, my surgeon was great and was really proactive and was like a second father to me. And he got me into a diagnostic study that was being done at UCLA. And I was sent out there and did the manometry study, which was unfortunately one of my first memories and one of the worst memories that I have. Because back then they didn't exactly believe in sedation for children who are getting, you know, huge tubes shoved up their noses. So the study went on, and that's when they figured out that I did, in fact, have pseudoobstruction. By the end of all of my major abdominal surgeries, I had my entire colon taken out and 17% of my small bowel, leaving me with a permanent ileostomy and on TPN pretty much for the rest of my life. I have never known what a quote-unquote normal life is. I've never known healthy, which to me has been a blessing in a way, because of the fact that I don't necessarily know what I'm missing. I don't know what to have on me.
Yeah, may I stop you for just, and I'm so sorry, but we can hear somebody breathing. I know this sounds awful, but being that maybe you're too close to the microphone or too close to your phone and whatever device you're using, or the telephone, so can you just be mindful of that? Because it's picking up somebody who has a very, very steady breathing. I don't know if people could hear it.
Yeah.
Still there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to want to hold their breath either. But be mindful of that, because everybody can hear what's going on in the background. And sometimes if you're too close to the microphone, it's going to pick up even a swallow if you have a very sensitive mic. Okay, Brittany, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Yep. Go ahead.
So, oh, no problem. So I have never known, like I said, never known I healthy life. However, I have known times where I've been healthier than others. Like with anybody with this disease, you have your ups and downs. As far as motility goes, you never know what it's going to be from one day or another to another. Sometimes not even an hour to the next. This disease affects everything in your life. Anybody who has a motility disorder knows that it doesn't just affect the person with the motility disorder. It affects their parents, their siblings, their partners, their spouses, their friends. I have found having the perspective of having this disease in every stage of my life and learning to deal with it in every stage of my life, I found that what may have worked for me when I was a child won't work for me now. Having motility issues and being on TPN, I was actually made fun of quite a bit when I was a child, mostly for... Oddly enough, for something that has nothing to do with the fact that I have a motility disorder, I have chubby cheeks. It's not because of medication that I'm on. It's not because of anything else. It's just because I have chubby cheeks. If you looked at my mom, you would see where my chubby cheeks came from. But that was one of the things I was made fun of. But the other thing that I was made fun of a lot was for looking a lot younger than I am. And one of the things people used to tell me all the time, and still do to this day, is, oh, you'll love it when you get older. Well, great, but I hate it right now. People, especially kids, when I would be like in the upper grades of whatever school I was in, would think I was actually in the lower grades. And that might not seem like a big deal when you're an adult, but when you're a child, that is a big deal. The other thing I was made fun of, and I think this was the hardest thing for me to deal with, was having the ostomy. One of the big misconceptions is that people will know that you have an ostomy, and that isn't true. However, there are times where it can be a little bit more noticeable than others, or especially when I was a child, I wasn't as aware to hide it, if you will. And there were times where, you know, moving around or even just being in a classroom, it would crinkle and make noise. And people would make fun of me and say that I was still wearing a diaper. So I actually started seeing a social worker when I was in kindergarten. And I saw social workers throughout my school years up until high school. when I was little, I used to tell my classmates about my disease in using the terms that a child would use so that they would understand what I was talking about. I didn't have my mom tell them because I didn't want her to try to explain to little kids when she was an adult. You know, they don't talk the same language. And I had a baby doll that I would bring in that had a makeshift bag and a makeshift line, and I would show people on the baby doll, this is what I have. And that worked for a while, but as I got older, I didn't want people to know as much. That was more of a private matter, and that was both a hindrance and a hope. But as I got older, I realized that every new stage that I entered, I had to come to terms with this disease and to figure out how I wanted to live with it and make peace with it in each stage. Dating was oh so much fun. Trying to explain to someone in, you know, high school age about this disease is not easy. It's embarrassing. It's uncomfortable. You know, when you're dating in high school, there's a lot you don't talk about. But for me, I had to. I had to be honest and open about certain aspects of my disease. in high school, I actually went through a time where I was pretty healthy. Besides being on TPN, I didn't have to have any other surgeries. I was doing really well. I was on a good TPN regimen. Other than going in for the occasional line replacement, I didn't miss school much. I didn't have too much pain at that point. And I thought, ooh, okay, I'm going to have a great life. And I started planning for my life. So I started planning for college. I started planning what I wanted to do. at that point, I wanted to be a teacher. I was working two part-time jobs as well as going to school. And I kept going like that for a while. And then my first year of college came. And at the end of my first year of college, I went in for a routine line replacement, and I was told that I had no more IV access. And that was because after 19 years of having central lines, all my veins in my chest had given up. And at that point, they didn't know what to do with me, and they literally just told me good luck, and they didn't have much hope for me. And at that point, I really thought I was not going to be here anymore. And I went into a very dark place because I didn't want to give up. But at the same time, I didn't have anybody telling me that there's other options. And I became very, very depressed. And luckily, my parents saw that in me and got me help. And I started seeing a psychiatrist and seeing a therapist and talking with my therapist on, I think it was like a every 2 week thing. But I also, you know, pulled away from everybody. I lost a lot of friends. I had to quit working. I had to quit going to school because my health had declined so rapidly and by so much. And I really didn't see why I was still here. Luckily, I had a GI doctor at that point who said that, you know, he could help me. And very, very, very slowly, my nutrition got back on track. And I started gaining weight again and started being able to live again. And that lasted for a few years, and then my health went right back down the tubes. And again, I was faced with a life-altering decision on what to do. And I don't know if it was the fact that it was 6 years later and technology had changed, or it was just being a matter of being at the right place in the right time with the right people. But I was told that I did have an option for a line, and that a central line could be placed into the femoral vein and tunneled into, you know, to my leg, which was exciting and so scary at the same time, because I was also warned that that carries a very huge risk of infection. And up to that point, all my lines that had been in my chest, not a single one had ever been infected. But I was facing that choice of, do I give it another go and see how long it lasts, or do I just give up? And I have a great support as far as family goes, so I knew that I didn't want to give up on them, and I ended up getting the line and very quickly gained back nutritional health. And since then, I've been on TPN again, and I have accepted the fact that I will never be off of it, which is fine. But it does scare me, the fact that these do get infected, and now that I've had the lines in my femoral vein, I have been they've gotten infected twice now. Not from my own doing, but just from the fact of where they are. So this, my point is, with all of the things that I have been through, and the things that I am sure all of you have been through with multiple diagnoses and just living with a motility disorder in general is very hard. You have to, if I've learned anything, it's that you have to accept what's going on at that moment and figure out how you want to deal with it. We all have our own set of individual circumstances that make those decisions either easier or a lot harder. But we have to understand that these are the cards that we have been given, and we have to figure out how we want to deal with them. And I'm not saying that that is ever easy, because I know that is not. But the good thing is that we all have support here with one another, and we can be on these conference calls, and even if nobody talks, we know that there are other people on here that are listening that can hear what we have to say and can understand what we're going through. These diseases are also, most of the time, progressive, and we know that there's not necessarily, you know, they're not going to get better. They're going to get worse. In my case, my pain has gotten worse over the years. I am now in pain every single day, as many of you are. Same thing with nausea. The nausea gets worse. And we have to figure out how to deal with that and everything that goes with that. I have been lucky enough to be given this opportunity to do these programs, and each month I plan on covering a different topic and I would love any input any of you guys have. But it was interesting. I was on the Student Obstruction Conference a while ago, and I was talking about having an ostomy, and the lovely Laura had told me that she learned things from me that she had never known, and one of my upcoming groups is going to be about ostomies because there's so many myths surrounding having an ostomy and living with an ostomy. But that's one thing that we can all do is learn from each other. And my biggest goal for this group is for it to be a safe place to talk about anything that goes along with having a motility disorder, because it does not just affect the physical. Of course, the physical part is a big part, whether it's pain, nausea, not being able to eat, whatever individual aspect you're going through. But it also, it encompasses everything in your life. It has an effect on everything in your life, whether you want it to or not. Relationships suffer. Some relationships get better. You know, choosing whether or not you're able to go to school or work or having a love life of any kind. I know for the majority of my life, I figured I would be single forever. And I actually came to a point where I was peaceful with that. I figured I would live either under my parents' roof for the rest of my life, or maybe I would live on my own with my parents' help, but I would be single. And if you had told me 5 years ago that I would be in a very happy, committed relationship and that I would be with this person for, you know, the rest of my life, I would have laughed at you. But now that's where I am. And you never know what's going to come around the corner. I've looked for many years on what my purpose in life is, especially not being able to work. And as my disease progresses and I'm in more pain and unable to do more things physically, I found that what I thought my purpose was, which I thought was taking care of the house, you know, cooking, cleaning, doing laundry, those kind of things, I realized I was no longer able to do a lot of that because of how my disease has progressed. So I looked for what now? And I knew I couldn't work. And somehow I found AGMD, and it's led me here to doing this. But I want, like I said before, I want to encourage everybody to speak up. This is a place of no judgment. Anything you say here, nobody's going to be thinking anything less of you, that's for sure. And I definitely want everyone to feel that they can just ask questions or vent about whatever they want.
Hello?
Hello. I'm here.
Okay. Well, Brittany, this is Laura. I just want to throw something out there real quick.
Yes.
I think that your story is remarkable, and to be doing as well as you're doing at your age with what you've been through, kudos to you, hon.
Thank you.
But the only thing that I have to stand up and always correct, and it doesn't matter who says it because it's just me, when we say that our diseases are never going to get better and that they're always going to get worse, that's the reality we live in right now, and it is true. That's how I live my life, that it's not going to get better. However, having been in a professional patient for 38 years in the medical system, the advances in medical technology, 5 years from now, we could all be walking around going, wow, that was a rush. And
you are,
problem. I mean, right now it's mostly symptom control. Those are
right.
The drugs that are coming out. But the research is out there. Even though we don't see it, they are doing it. And no, it's not going to be, you know, a miracle. There's 30,000 diseases out there
right
now. 30,000. You know, we're one or we're a few group. So they're all trying to work on them. But the advances, I mean, if you had told me 38 years ago that I'd be alive today as a type 1 diabetic, I would have, the doctors would have called you a liar.
Right.
And if they hadn't come up with synthetic insulin, I wouldn't be. It's just
right.
the way none of us would. We didn't live this
right.
long.
Right.
You know, so
and
the,
you are the, completely correct.
The hope is always there.
That's oh, yeah.
That's my only point. It's,
yeah.
It, there will be a sudden fix somewhere, but we have mm-hmm. to just wait to get to it.
Right.
Okay,
and
anybody
you're,
else?
Yeah. Well, I found it interesting. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Brittany, this is Anand, and I want to applaud you for dealing with all of your challenges the best way you could. And I can relate because to some of the challenges, because in high school, luckily, unfortunately, my health had declined overnight. I am blind, but I also have motility disorder. I also have cerebral palsy.
I'm sorry. Every time you speak, we're getting a lot of noise on your end for some reason.
I don't have any.
That's very strange. Can I mute you for a minute and let's just see?
That's weird.
I'm still here.
Okay.
Okay.
So go ahead.
And so I had to deal with issues with when I was in high school, lost the ability to walk, and then for a year and a half was having vomiting, and we didn't know why, and it turned out it was gallbladder issues. And that was suddenly got better, but the motility, I can totally agree, because in 2002, all the symptoms just woke up one day, was eating that night, and just started vomiting, and couldn't figure out why, and it took 3 to 4 years to be diagnosed, and it's been challenging because, it's difficult. I used to work with the kids, but it's hard to go places because what do you do if you're, you're out and about? What do you do if you have to vomit? And there are people that don't want to deal with, taking you to the bathroom to do that.
Right.
They don't want to deal with what you vomit. I have one friend. We don't talk about vomiting. We don't discuss it. So I have found that I have a job where I volunteer at home, and I found that being at home, as I can be here, volunteer with the phone, and be a part of AGMD. AGMD has been a wonderful resource for me. Mary Angela's just been a godsend because a lot of people do stuff with the internet, and I'm not able to do that. And through the phone, Mary Angela can give you my contact information. Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk with you.
Oh, my God. And I really did not pay Anand for all of those comments. Thank you very much. Had I known you were going to do that, I would just pay you a salary, and you can just keep on. Truly, I think that, so many of you here have heard Brittany's story, and perhaps some of your stories liken to hers or very similar. If not similar, then perhaps you've had some experiences that you want to share. Because I think that with all of us, we all have common threads. I don't have an ostomy like Brittany does, but certainly I can appreciate a lot of the things that she said. Mm-hmm. And this is a place to really talk. So if anybody wants to share some of their experiences or have any questions, but just want to describe what you're going through or how you're trying to find your purpose in life or how you're trying to accept it or have other people, this is a place to do it.
Mary Angela, did I say something to make you feel awkward?
Or other people have a chance. Yes, enough.
Did I say something to make you feel awkward? Or
you never do, and nobody can make me feel awkward, believe me. I'm beyond that stage. Anybody else want to jump in? Share what they're thinking, their thoughts, what they're going through, any problems they're having, or ray of hope that they've experienced in their life. No, so Brittany's things, and I know Laura had touched upon this too, is that hope, because we've gotten whatever problems we've had in our life. We started at a very young age. I was a young adult. I was 26. It was you will still to this day, when something is happening to you, whether you get the flu, whether it's an off day and you're exhausted and you just kind of, you get that brain fog, which so many of us have, or you talk to somebody and then they end up offering you food and you're so frustrated because people just don't understand, or maybe people don't believe you. Whatever it may be, we've all been there. And I think one of the major things that I've learned is if I allow these things to control me, my thoughts, then number one, it's getting in my way of trying to live a quality of life. It means that those things are taking a hold of me and stripping me away of some of the other things that are more important in my life, which is trying to survive and live every single day to the best of my ability. So having that in mind, I know at the beginning of my journey, having to say goodbye to food and have people not believe you and still offer you that food was a very, very difficult time in my life. But then that decision came where it was going to be mind over matter. I was not going to let this bother me and get into my head to the point where it was going to just control my every aspect. And when you have that kind of an attitude, which is very, very difficult to even get because there are times you bought it and then you might dip again.
Oh, yeah.
But no matter where we are in life, and Brittany has exemplified this, you have something new that happens. You have to kind of go through all the stages of grieving and mourning and trying to figure out now what am I going to do. And then once that, get used to that level, the breath and say, okay, so this is what my life is about.
Right.
And then finally something else may happen. But it's all of these stages. It's not a continuously flowing. It has it's almost like an EKG with a heart that's out of control.
Yes.
The valley. Anybody else jump in? Talk to Brittany?
This is Lori. And hey, how are you? And as with other people that have these digestive issues, most of us have multiple autonomic disorder issues, and in sometimes I felt like for 15 years or so, my digestive tract and all my issues were my only problem. Now I've got swinging blood sugar levels, swinging heart rate, swinging blood pressure, and just a new multitude in blood sugars and the way that I had dealt with just finally accepting the digestive issues, I've spent now another year and a half going through that same acceptance of the other issues now, and I've reached that point that you were just mentioning of, I don't test my blood sugar anymore. I don't monitor my heart rate if it goes up and down, because it just does. All these things just happen, and now I've gone through a whole nother year of accepting the other syndrome, and you really do, you have to reach that point. I cannot test my blood pressure every time it goes up. It's going to go up, and then it's going to go down,
right.
And you just have to live with it and deal with it. And it's hard to get to that point.
And Lori, this is a
knock. It's very, very hard to get to that point. And you brought up a very good issue, and that is, actually, just kind of two things. One is a lot of patients, and there's research going on now because there's strong speculation that a lot of the motility problems could be related to autoimmune diseases. I know a lot of people...
And autonomic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was the second thing I'm going to get to. So a lot of people with scleroderma, they may have this issue. With diabetes, they may have those that issue. MS, they may have that issue. The other thing is autonomic, and there are so many patients that have these symptoms, and they don't realize that there's that connection. And a lot of people, too, they may go for one of the autonomic tests, and it comes back. This is not only with the autonomic test, but it doesn't come back. It comes back negative, saying that everything is fine. And I think that adds to the frustration, because you know your body is better than anybody else. Trying to, and even our bodies continue to betray us, but we're the ones dealing with it 24 hours a day. So yeah. I think that autonomic part is truly a big component as well. And I know that doctors are attaching a lot of, they're connecting the dots. So many of these things. What I remind everybody is the motility field is still pioneer territory.
Mm-hmm.
It is a complex system governed by so many other systems within your body, the autonomic, mm-hmm. the sympathetic, the enteric system, all of these things, hormonal, these are just to name a few. So because of the complexity of it, and when you're just in medical school, there's so much to learn, and they're starting to learn more about motility now, but you have to go for further training if you want to really specialize in this particular field. So keeping that in mind, and Laura has said that they're working on things, there's a lot of hope out there, and we get privy to a lot of things that are out there or that are going to be, are in the pipeline now. But before they even become somewhat public. But right. It's holding on to that hope and knowing that they're trying to connect all of these dots, and there are researchers all around the world who are working on this. Go ahead. Anybody else?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello? Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah. Hi. Okay, hi. My name is Lisa, and we're in New Jersey, Central Jersey. My daughter, who's now 13, has a problem of pseudo-obstructive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
This happened, I'd say she's had constipative issues since 3 years old. But these problems were actually accelerating
mm-hmm.
When she was towards the end of elementary school,
mm-hmm.
okay, where she was having these belly pains and she can't explain what it was. We went to CHOP, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and she stayed for 7 months for them to figure out what is the matter with her. She
mm-hmm.
would get, actually, her fits would be, she would get on the floor and into a ball.
Yep.
And in such agony. And then there was one, because I would always say, let's go to the hospital, I'll take you to the hospital. And she'd say, no, she's very hard-headed. But
we all are.
Night, no, there's this, yeah. But there was this one night. Well, she wasn't eating and she wasn't doing anything. Well, she went to school. There's this one night. She
uh-huh.
went to school. She came home full day. Okay? She didn't want to eat. She, she didn't want to drink. And she was in so much agony that night, and she said, I hospital. That's all she said was hospital. So we packed up our stuff to CHOP, and we went to Philadelphia. Yes, we found out that she had a volvulus and they had to cut 3 feet of her intestine colon out.
Mm-hmm.
And she is now currently wearing a bag.
Uh-huh.
A colostomy bag. But the problems didn't end there. She also had something called periduodenal hernia.
Okay.
Which is extremely rare, according to the surgeon, who, she was an awesome surgeon, and she left, unfortunately. She said, you know, very, very rare. Her intestines itself, anatomically, weren't quite right. She had to kind of do bypass, you know, kind of bypasses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she still was in a lot of pain. Of course, you know, with the surgery and everything, but her eating was poor, so they wanted to put a feeding tube down,
mm-hmm.
and her jejunum, just to say that her anatomy isn't good, but jejunum happens to be not a shape of like. It rounded shape. It was
mm-hmm.
more of a triangular.
Mm.
So when radiology put it in, it snapped back up. And they done it so many times that they couldn't do it. So they asked surgery to come in and do it. And they couldn't do it. So she had to get two... buttons, I will say, but it's a J tube and a G tube, you know, for one for feeding, the other one for like medication. And she's now, this happened like 2 years ago, so now she's 13. Of course, she come of age. I had a lot of tons of concerns, you know, since she's going to be of age and boys and all that. You know, you think of those things, but you know, but her health, of course. She gets into these flares. Now, when they first, it took them 7 months, so they did a lot of round table talking about what is going on with this child. We don't know what's causing the pain. We don't know what is happening with her. And then one day they came in and they said, your child is like one of the first children who has something called pseudo-obstructive disorder. And so I found out, as well as gastroparesis. So I found that to be, you know, kind of mind-blowing. Because now they, you know, whenever they see a patient that kind of appears to be like my daughter, they're going to go with, well, possibly a pseudo obstructive, or you know, and or gastroparesis issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I just
excuse me. Can I ask you to clarify one thing you just said? So she has had those surgeries, and
she had five surgeries,
right? And then she was still experiencing the massive pain that they thought would be if there was an obstruction.
Yes.
Okay.
They didn't know what
but
was going
but
on.
They don't find one, but the pain
right.
is there.
Right. Okay. Exactly. That's exactly
yeah.
what happened. So,
I just want to interject for a minute and tell you, first of all, I'm a longtime patient with pseudo-obstruction, and my heart goes out. So sorry that your daughter has been going through that. But second of all, we do have a pseudo-obstruction telephone internet program, as well as a gastroparesis one. They're specifically for that, as well as a parent group. All those are taking place this month. So I think that those three may be a benefit for you as well.
And Mary Angela, not to interrupt. I was just going to say, and for your daughter, speaking from someone who has had this disease for forever, the young adult group or a teen group on the internet or things like that where she can talk about how she's feeling too would be definitely helpful. I came around with this disease, not to make me sound like I'm, ancient or anything, but before, like, the internet was a big thing. So I didn't have the support. In fact, I didn't talk to another person with pseudo-obstruction until I talked to Mary Angela, and that was just this last year. So I always thought I was alone. And for your daughter to know that there's other people. Yeah.
That's how she's sitting next to me. You want to have a little chat with all of that?
I can't hear you.
Was that?
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know she was talking. I couldn't hear anything. That's why I was making sure she wasn't talking.
Yeah, I'll put her on, on speaker.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
My heart goes out to you with everything that you are going through, and I understand. I'm not going to say I know how you feel because everybody is different, and what you are experiencing is completely unique to you. However, I have been in a similar place to you. I have had pseudo-obstruction for my whole life. And I've had an ostomy bag for my entire life. So I understand on those two fronts. And I just want you to know, first of all, that you are not alone. And these groups are great. And if you want to participate, you're more than welcome. Or if you just want to come on and listen, please do. Especially being in, are you in high school now?
No, I'm in middle school.
Okay. Well, middle school is tough for anybody. I have two nephews, and one of them saw a movie, I think it was called Middle School Sucks. So everybody knows middle school is hard. and high school is hard for anybody. But especially with these diseases, it gets harder. But you are not alone, and you have a ton of support here. And if you ever need to talk to somebody, we're all here for you.
We are all here for you.
And your mom.
Absolutely.
What she's going through now is she's having continual pain. And she's missing on a lot of school.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a lot of calls, like, from the nurse. Pick her up. She's dizzy, vomiting, she's nauseous. I got the gamut. And she's in pain. Now, the thing is, there are people that are kind of, unless they see what's wrong, she did vomit. They think that. It's not, or it doesn't exist. So, it's like if you show somebody, then they believe.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, could you get closer to the phone? We can't hear you.
Okay. All right. In other words, people don't believe it.
Right.
Unless they see something like vomited. Oh, okay, yes, he's. So, like with the nurse, we're trying to get her, help, at home so she doesn't fall behind like she did in middle school. When she was in the hospital for 7 months, she missed a whole year of school virtually. And to catch up to on the second half of a two-year school to get to the middle school was very difficult for her. Her grades were bouncing up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And now she was in the hospital last week. Two weeks ago, with extreme pain and whatever. So they gave her an endoscopy, and they gave her a colonoscopy through her stoma, and they took biopsies. As well, they gave her Botox in her pylorus because her pylorus is also now misshapen. So there's lots of things, you know, in her intestinal and gastro area that causes difficulty for her.
Lisa, this is a nom, and I understand about missing a lot of school. I missed a whole year of school. I was having intestinal vomiting issues, and it was difficult.
Yes.
And I sympathize. One of the things that we had to do was see if someone could bring some work home that she can do at home, because I understand. I was also doing a work experience type job back then, and that I had missed like a whole year of school, and it was really, really difficult. And I applaud, you know, her trying to deal with the vomiting and the different issues. I can sympathize. I know it's very, very challenging and difficult, because if the teachers, you know, they don't see it, they don't understand what's going on.
Especially one teacher is, you know, writes in the comments at the bottom that says, if you don't come to school, you know, you're in threat of, like, she's not threatening that she's failing, but, you know, you're heading towards failure.
Yeah.
There is
a plan now in place to protect your daughter from all of this.
Right now we're doing that between the school nurse and CHOP.
Yeah.
The CHOP social worker is supposed to, we sent the facts over there. And
yeah.
Actually the doctor has it as well, so she's working on it.
Okay.
What's scary is that I never seen my daughter. There's plenty of nights that I had to go and take her to the emergency room there. And there was one night that was very scary. She was definitely dehydrating, and she was throwing up. But not just throwing up a little, you know, bits and pieces. She was throwing up, like, I'd say, if you know, like a popcorn bucket, like a whole pop, like that.
Yeah.
And, like, multiple ones.
Yeah.
Now, I never seen a kid throw up so much in my life. So
yeah.
So it's scabbing.
Yeah.
So, and let's get to the now. She is, okay, they took her biopsies. They found out that she has an ileus and ileitis. So, on top of, you know, all of this. So she's in immense pain. Nobody believes, you know, they hold like an uncertain flag with her. We're not so sure with her, but the nurse knows. The nurse, you know, says, "Look, you do what you think is right for your daughter." And of course, I'm like, "Well, she's
right.
Really, you know, she's really ill. I'm not going to keep her in school. It's just not going to happen." And the thing is, I was never a person to not go to school, and the thing is, I don't understand because I never had this before. Never had, you know, her ailments. So I don't know what kind of pain she's going through. I do not know, you know, when she's feeling good, when she's not. And that was a question I did ask her when she was in the hospital a few weeks back. I said, honey, when do you feel, you know, good, a good day? And she says, Mommy, I have days that I cope and I can go to school and make it through school. And then there are days that are worse, and then there are days that are virtually impossible. So based on all that, you know, it gave me an idea that there's, you know, I mean, I'm just hoping this girl's having a, you know, a quality of life.
She can definitely have a quality of life. And I don't mean to interrupt, but we are nearing the end. So I want to make sure anybody else could get any questions, if they have any questions, thoughts. But I encourage both of you to come on these conferences, and there is hope. There's a lot of hope. And as far as the school part goes, and I'll just, one piece of advice that I have for that is during the time that I was in school, every year I would have a meeting with all of my teachers and the school nurse, and then if like the dean of students needed to be involved or an assistant principal or whatever, and I would have a meeting with everybody in the beginning of the year within the first week or two of school so that all of my teachers knew going in, this is, you know, this is Brittany, this is what she has. If she's out, we need you to get her schoolwork together immediately. There's no, you know, waiting around. If she has to get up in the middle of class to go to the bathroom, you let her. And these things are in place from the beginning so that if anything happens during the rest of the school year, we don't have to worry about it.
They do have a 504.
Yes, good.
Have a 504, but they may have to tweak it because of now the new problems that she's, you know, that's coming up.
And that they can do every year.
Yeah. So that's why the nurse is waiting for the information from the hospital. And from that point, you know, that's when they'll put together a new 504 to meet her needs.
Right.
So that's what's going on with her, and I don't want to take much time. But
hey, we only have like 2 minutes left. Yeah.
go. I'm so sorry.
No.
It's a long story.
No, and I'm glad you're on, and I can tell you're a champion for your daughter. And if you're, and I'm sure you give a lot of strength to her, and she gives a lot of strength to you. But is there anybody else who has any thoughts or comments or questions?
I just want to say thanks to Mary Angela for having this meeting, and I really enjoyed being a part of it. And I definitely will be back for the gastroparesis one. And thanks to Brittany.
Thank you. And
thank you so much.
Again, I didn't pay her for this, but Brittany, I just want to thank you before you wrap up, and thank you for presenting this program and for sharing your story with others. And for those who participated, I want to thank you for sharing, being at this program. If you were willing to share, we greatly appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And if you just wanted to listen in, we greatly appreciate that as well. If you need any assistance or further assistance, or you want to stay connected, please just stay in touch with our organization, and you are all heroes in my book. Quiet heroes who live with this 24 hours a day. Brittany, wrap it up.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for joining, and if you guys have any ideas or thoughts that you want covered on another meeting, just send them over to Mary Angela. She'll get them to me. And I thank everybody for being on here, and I hope everybody has as good of a day as they possibly can given this disease. And again, I thank you all for listening, and I hope you guys come back next month. Have a wonderful time, or have a wonderful day, I should say. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.